Today's theme is about alignment and how God can reverse situations that seem impossible to our human understanding. And I showed you just a PowerPoint of just some of the stories in Russia of people like Alexei and Yulia, who were drug addicts, who had committed murder, who were in prison, and their lives just completely transformed, and God just bringing about a reversal. And just the driver of the vehicle that drove us around in Siberia during my last visit, his name was Victor. And I said to Victor, you know, heard a little bit of your testimony, tell us what happened. And he said, you know, I was in the mafia, I roughed someone up, killed them, was in prison, was there for 15 years. I said, you got 15 years for murder? Because in Russia, life is quite cheap. And so I said, well, 15 years. He said, no, I had two sentences. So I got 8 years and then another 7 years. I said, so what was the 7 years for? He said, I took someone hostage in prison. I said, who was it that you took hostage? He goes, the colonel in charge of the prison. I said, yeah, that would give you 7 years. And he said, you know, they put me in a box for 6 months, 1.5 meters by 1.5 meters, and they fed me through a hole, and that was my punishment. And across his eyelids, he's got tattooed, do not disturb. And he's just the most amazing man now. He's a complete servant. He's married. Went out there last time. He introduced me to his new wife. Got a small baby. The girl had a little daughter from a previous marriage. But just a whole reversal of fortune. God had worked in their lives. And one of my favorite stories from history about reversal is about Gandhi. And Gandhi was a very clever man. And he led India to independence. And he was one who lived through reversal of fortune. And he had studied in England. And he studied at the University College of London. And he studied law. And this was over 100 years ago. And there was a professor there. And his name was Professor Peters. And Professor Peters despised Gandhi, didn't like Gandhi. And as you read through these stories, you understand that Gandhi had a real sense of humor. And Gandhi irritated Professor Peters. And somehow, I don't know what happened, but Gandhi had to write an exam paper. He sat his exam paper, and he got, all the students were given their exam papers back. And Gandhi picked his up. And scrawled across it was the word idiot. And Gandhi looked at it and thought, not to be outdone, ran after Professor Peters and said, Professor Peters, you've signed your name here, but you haven't given me a mark. And I love that story. And then he found Professor Peters in the cafeteria, and he went to sit with Professor Peters, and Professor Peters didn't like it. And he was furious and green, it says, with rage. And so they were having lunch, and Gandhi came along with his tray and sat next to the professor. And the professor, in his arrogance, said, Mr. Gandhi, you do not understand. A pig and a bird do not sit together to eat. To which Gandhi replies, you do not worry, Professor, I will fly away. And he went and sat at another table. And, you know, this is a story of reversal. And as we look at the story of Esther today, it's an amazing story of reversal. And I don't know what is going on in your life, but God is a God of reversal. And if you're facing challenges and hardship, and I don't know what you go home to today, but God can bring about reversal when everything seems against us. And the reason I want to talk about the life of Esther is because it talks about Esther getting involved with God's bigger picture. It's an amazing story of this powerless girl in the Persian Empire, living basically as a refugee, displaced, who was powerless, who then becomes very powerful. And it talks about alignment. And the story today and the message today is, and my question to us is, What are you aligned with? Are you aware of the bigger picture in your life? And so Esther, who grows up in Persia, who's powerless, who is an orphan girl, becomes powerful. And she becomes a policymaker in the Persian Empire, a complete reversal of fortune. And the Jews, every year at Purim, their special festival, they all stand together and they read this whole book of Esther, the whole book in its entirety, to remember God's deliverance of the Jewish people. And it's a very controversial book. And as you study this book, it's controversial. There's no mention of God's name. Some in history wanted the book called Mordecai, and they said Esther's not really the hero here. It's Mordecai. Martin Luther, during the time of the Reformation, he didn't like the book. He said it was full of heathen naughtiness. If you say that in church, everyone goes home to read it. And he tossed it into the River Elbe and said, I don't want this book. I don't like it. Others thought it was a complete fabrication. As you look at the book and you look at the parallels and the coincidences, we call them God incidences. Some said it was an Arabian night tale. But I believe, we as Baptists, you know, we believe it was a true story. It happened, and it was an amazing intervention by God to save the Jewish people. And although God is unseen in this story, he is not absent. And it's an important book because it reveals how God, even though unseen, is at work using all our actions and decisions for his greater plans. And just to recap the story, I know we all know it, but just a couple of points about the story. The Jewish people were living in exile. They had broken the covenant. The temple in Jerusalem was far away. And they were just trying to work out their faith in a pagan country. And the question on everyone's mind was, has God forgotten us? Will God restore our fortune? Cyrus had overthrown the Babylonians and issued a decree that everyone could return if they wanted to. But many of the Jews said, no, life is comfortable here. Let's remain where we are. Life and work is good for us. And King Xerxes in the story, or Ahasuerus, was in power. He was cruel. He was at war with Greece. And the king throws a banquet to show off his wealth. And Vashti, his queen, displeases him and publicly humiliates him. And so the king puts Vashti aside. And Queen and Esther, who later becomes the queen, she wins a beauty pageant. She's a Jew. And Mordecai, which is Esther's older cousin, says to her, just hide your identity. It's not in your favor. Just hide your identity as a Jew. And so Esther is just raised up to become the queen. And she pleases the king. She pleases everybody around her. And then suddenly the story introduces a person called Haman, who is an Amalekite. And they have a history of hating the Jews. And he wants to annihilate the Jews. And a decree is issued for all people to destroy the Jews wherever they are in the kingdom. And Mordecai sends a message to Esther, who is in the palace now. And he says to her, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. And the whole story changes in chapter 4. And the story, we know the story. Haman is hanged. The Jews are saved and the enemies destroyed. And Mordecai and Esther become the policy makers. They become leaders in the Persian Empire, which was the most powerful empire at that time. But as you study this story, the narrator introduces these verses, and as he refers to Esther, he begins to refer to her as Queen Esther. I'm a quantity surveyor by profession, so count up the number of times Esther is referred to, 37 times. But after she aligns herself with God's people, the narrator refers to her as Queen Esther. And it was when Esther aligned herself with God's covenant people that she found her dignity and her position in life. And she could have easily lived a life of compromise. She could have said, she could have sent a message back to Mordecai saying, hey, listen, I'll be praying for you. You know, I'm safe. Maybe God's put me here just to look after me. But she risks her life, and the story changes position. And it's amazing, this quiet girl. It says that she was under Mordecai's care. It says that Mordecai went down to the palace every day to check on her. And suddenly, this girl starts calling all the shots. One of the commentators says this, Esther assumes the dignity and power of her royal position only after she claims her true identity as a woman of God. And I just wonder about us today. What is it that God has called us to? Are we living some kind of parallel life to really what God would have us do? And just some three short points just about Esther's life. And the first one is that when Esther aligned herself with God's people, she understood the bigger picture of what was going on around her. She would have understood the coincidences, and that it wasn't just because of her beauty that God placed her in the palace. She would have understood that her privileged position came with great responsibility. And she would have understood that the director of world affairs had placed her in the palace for such a time as this. And as you read chapter 2, the word favor is used time and time again to refer to Esther's life in the harem, in her dealings with the king, in dealings with the rest of the leaders in that palace. And it says that she found favor. And the Hebrew word here is, it wasn't just given to her because she was everyone's pet, because she was good looking. She was a beautiful girl. But it says that she was able to extract favor from people. She was a smart girl. She was talented. But God was working through her. She found favor with the chief eunuch in the harem. She found favor with the king. And when she went into the palace, when she wasn't supposed to go in, she found favor with the king. And I just wonder about us today. Where has God led us to? Where are you working? Where has God placed you in your family? Who are your contacts? Can we see divine fingerprints within those positions? I'll just read something to you. Effective service almost always comes by assignment rather than by choice. Though perhaps not as far-reaching an influence as Esther, we are each what God has made us with our own respective circle of opportunities. In opportunity lies the real test of character. Though we usually think of affliction as the major test of character, in Esther's case, prosperity and fame were the testing ground. And I just think of us here in Western Australia. We live in an amazing place. Our privileged lifestyle comes with great responsibility. Mordecai believed that Esther was placed in the king's household by divine appointment to do God's timely work. He passionately pleaded with Esther to put her life on the line because he believed the promises of God. He had watched the power and faithfulness of God unfold over the years. Mordecai understood that it is not failure that brings despair, but unfaithfulness and idleness. And so the question for me and for us today is, what position has God placed us in? Are you seeing God's divine fingerprints? I remember God's calling on my life when I first went to Russia. I was working in West Perth as a quantity surveyor, and I really enjoyed my position, and I had a great quantity surveyor who was teaching me, and he said, Lloyd, you know, these jobs, you listen well, because I'm retiring at the end of the year, and I'm handing all of this to you. And I thought, oh, no, you're not, because I'm going to Russia, and I just haven't told you yet. And he was training me, and the position, they put me through uni, and I felt God's calling on my life, which I had fought against for a number of years. And, you know, finally I went home. My parents said, have you been in to tell your boss that you're joining OM? I said, no, I just can't do it. They said, it's so dishonorable what you're doing. They've honored you all the way through uni. You've got to go and talk to them. So I went in to see the lead quantity surveyor, the principal, and I knocked on his door. I said, Paul, can I just talk to you? And he looked at me behind his desk, and he knew immediately I was going to resign. And I walked across, and he said, sit down. I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, it's going to sack me on the spot. And he said, Lloyd, what is it? And I said, you know I'm a Christian. And he said, yes, I do. And I said, I feel that God is calling me to go to Russia for a number of years. I would like to go. And he said, Lloyd, you have to go. He said, this is a calling on your life, and this is a non-Christian. I'm going, really? He goes, this is a calling on your life. You have to go. And he said, what can I do to help you? And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is amazing. And that company did more for me than anybody. And when we had the farewell, they closed the company for half a day, gave me a dinner and a luncheon and gave me a stack of over $10,000 as I went out the door and said, you know, we just want to help you. And then they said, you can come back anytime you choose. You can come back. The job is always here. 2 years later, I came back. I phoned them. I said, do you have any work? And they said, no, but come back anyway. And it was during that process I saw that God's hand was on my life. And I saw that the director of world affairs had placed me in that position. A number of those people still support us financially. They were non-Christians. And I felt like God was just saying, this job I gave to you, you give it back to me when I ask for it back. You're not smart enough to get a job like this. You know, I gave this to you. And I think for all of us is that God has put us in positions. And are we recognizing what God is doing in those positions? And just the second point is that Esther's alignment with God's covenant people gave her direction and passion. And it gave her energy and courage. And Esther is portrayed in these first few chapters as the small, innocent girl. Everything's overtaken her. She's in the palace. She didn't want to be there. But suddenly in chapter 4 at the end here, she is the one giving Mordecai direction. She becomes a leader overnight. She risks her life, and she becomes the policy maker. And the question is do we have courage? You know, do we bound out of bed in the morning? Are we really aligning ourselves with God's purposes? I just want to, Alex, could you put the PowerPoint back on again? And I just want to flick through to some of, just a couple of the characters, just people that I met. And so, I just want to talk about this young girl here. So just a few years ago when I was there, I went to meet this couple, Saiful and Firuza, and their three children. The other two are not there. And this couple were refugees in Central Asia, and they came out to Russia to flee from persecution. And they introduced me to this little girl here, Gulia. She's 24. And they were nursing her back to health. She'd just been knifed in the stomach 4 times. And she was a Muslim this evening when we met her. And she was in a coma. She was being operated on. And the hospital rang Saiful and Firuza and said, look, we've got this young girl. We're not sure if she's going to make it. She's been knifed. Can you come and look after her and nurse her? Because she's got no family here. She's just working, or we don't understand her situation. And so when I met Gulia, we were there for dinner, and she said, Lloyd, this couple, Saiful and Firuza, I hardly even know them. They're the most amazing Muslim people I've ever met. And I looked at Saiful and Firuza and I said, Muslim people? And she goes, and they go, Lloyd, she's not a Christian. She's a Muslim. She doesn't understand who we are, but we're explaining to her a vision that she saw while she was on the operating table. And this girl, Yulia, I said, Gulia, what's the vision that you saw? And she said, I saw a man in white. He was in robes. And she said, I had all these tubes down my throat and I was so thirsty. And this man in white came to me and said, Gulia, drink from this living water, from this waterfall. This will quench your soul and will give you hope and life. And she said, oh no, it's too pure. I can't drink. And Gulia said, you know, this couple are telling me about a person called Jesus. And she said, they're the most lovely people I've ever met. And it was the most amazing story of just talking, you know, just meeting with Gulia. And then a year later, I went to see Saiful and Firuza and I said, hey, where's Gulia? And they said, Lloyd, she's coming over in half an hour. She wants to meet you, but she's getting baptized this weekend. And Gulia became a Christian. And just an amazing story. And the person who had knifed her was her husband. And he had stabbed her because he thought she was having an affair. She wasn't. And he is now in prison and she goes to visit him all the time and witness to him. But it was just an amazing reversal, a story. But this girl is so brave. And so here she is getting baptized in the bath. So we had to heat the water up. She was still very weak, but she said, I want to be baptized. And she's a courageous girl. She's a real leader. And so my wife, Catherine, went back to record all their stories. Because as Muslims, ex-Muslims, they're really persecuted when they go home. And so Catherine went to meet Gulia, but she was already back in Central Asia. She's in Tajikistan. She set up a business. A lot of the people who are working for her have already become Christians. And so the team flew down Firuza, the girl who had led her to become a Christian, to go and help disciple some of the girls. And so this is just an amazing story. But Gulia aligned herself with Christianity. She became a Christian. And she has the direction, she had, like Esther, passion, energy, and courage. And so the question for us is, what are we aligned with? Do we have direction and passion, energy and courage? But it's just an amazing story. And then just back here to Saiful and Firuza. And I'll tell you their story just in a minute. But Esther's alignment, just as third point here, Esther's alignment gave her hope despite the consequences. And she said to Mordecai, look, if I perish, I perish, but I'll go in before the king. There was no guarantee of her safety. But Esther understood there was an overarching story. And she knew that God would use her, even if she had to give her life, that God would use her in his plans. And she had hope despite the personal consequences of her decision. And I met these guys just 3 years ago. And they fled persecution. They were Uzbeks living in Kyrgyzia. And this was on the news a few years ago. And they came out as church planters and they came as refugees to Russia. The Russians despise anyone from an Asian heritage, anyone with colored skin. And I know it's a gross generalization, but it's very nationalistic and they don't like foreigners, including Westerners. And so this couple came as refugees. And while they were in Russia, they were granted visas to go to America. And for everyone in Central Asia, Russia, America is paradise. And they were given these visas to go as refugees. But they felt that God's God was calling them to stay, and they gave up those visas and they aligned themselves with OM's work in Russia, and they became church planters. And they said, God has called us to work amongst the Central Asians who come to Russia for work. It's really difficult living conditions. They leave their families behind, earn better money in Russia, send the money back home, but they leave their families behind. And so they came to work. And so then they planted this church, and it's just going amazingly well. And it's just fantastic just to see, just the hope that they have, but despite the personal consequences. And just for their children, so difficult. Because the eldest girl is trying to get into dentistry school at the moment, really bright. But because she's Uzbek, places are very, very limited for her. And so just in closing here, when we align ourselves with God and his purposes, our lives take on much greater significance. We gain an understanding about the purpose of life, how our lives fit into God's purposes, but it gives us direction and passion, and it gives us a hope for the future, despite life being very difficult at the moment. But Esther was transported into this world that she didn't want to be in. And many of us end up in a second choice world, not through circumstances of our own choosing. Maybe you've lost your job or illness or just family situation. But Esther was faithful in the world that she ended up in. And the first few chapters of Esther don't record the internal dialogue that was going on inside of her. And it wasn't that it wasn't important, but the author decided not to record it. And like Daniel, she was trapped in this foreign land, but we too in the daily grind can lay a platform for the future. And so often the circumstances are beyond our control and life just overtakes us. But God requires us to serve faithfully in the situation that we're in. We may be vulnerable, but we're not helpless. And God is able to work through the pressures that we face, and he can bring about a reversal of fortune. And as you look at the story of Esther, God's hand is sometimes invisible, but it cannot be interpreted as being absent. God is at work in our lives. And this whole book of Esther is about reversal. The tables being turned and a helpless situation turned around. And so at the end of Esther's life or Esther's story, we see Haman hanged and 75,000 of their enemies slaughtered. And just an amazing reversal. You think of Gandhi in India. I wonder what Professor Peters thought when Gandhi became the leader in India. But what is going on in your life? Do you understand? Do I understand what God is doing in the bigger picture? And do we have the courage to really align ourselves with what God is doing? And if you're lacking passion and drive, maybe it's because you haven't aligned yourself fully. And that takes courage. So let's just pray together. Father, I just thank you for the most amazing place that we live in. And I just pray that you would just help us to align ourselves with your purposes in this generation. Lord, give us courage and help us to understand the divine fingerprints of where you've placed us within our families, with whatever responsibility we have. Lord, watch over us and show us with spiritual eyes what you're doing, even though things seem so against us at times. Lord, thank you for this example of Esther. Help us to be courageous. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.